I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
July 19, 1952, Washington National Airport. Air traffic controller Edward Nugent spots seven objects on his radar, 15 miles southwest of the city. No known aircraft are in the area, and the objects do not follow any established flight path. Nugent's superior, Harry Barnes, contacts the airport's control tower. They too have seen the radar blips, and also bright lights hovering in the sky, before zooming off at incredible speed. When the objects head toward the White House and Capitol Building, Andrews Air Force Base is alerted. The radar controllers continue to track the blips, and several see orange-red lights flashing in the area. Just as the scrambled jet fighters arrive, they disappear, only to return once the U.S. craft run low on fuel and return to base.
Welcome to Alien Nation, the show about extraterrestrials and UFOs, asking the question, are we alone? In Alien Nation, I talk to other Earthlings about their otherworldly encounters, and we love hearing your stories, so please get in touch. I'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. My guest today is the founder of ETN Newsroom and producer of Eclectia, a compilation album of songs by musicians who have had ET experiences. Welcome to Alien Nation, Joanna Summerscales. Okay, so my first question to you, Joanna, is how did you become involved in all this?
You know what? It's really interesting because there's not actually one thing. So I come from a point of view of, I guess, consciousness. And when I say that, I mean like a meditation work, healing. Yeah. I'm a regression practitioner, just started to open my practice again. And through that, I kind of met a lot of what I'd call my soul tribe. Yeah. And these are people who went to the Philippines with and met psychic surgeons, just stuff like that.
Oh, I love things like this.
Yeah, it's amazing stories. And that those people had contacts who were ET contactees, like Sixto Paz Wells, the American Peruvian. I got to meet him, have a chat with him and film him across the, you know, dining table with my friend. And I just thought, wow, you know, this is a whole nother thing. Began reading, began researching. And then in 2011, I don't know what that thing was. I actually started in 2010, the idea that is, but I started something called AMACH, the AMACH Project, which is AMMACH and stands for Anomalous Mind Management Abductee Contactee Helpline, because I provide a number which people can ring confidentially or whatever, leave a message on. Mm. And the reason I did that was because I was coming across a lot of people. And a lot of people in the UK were used to hearing about the American side of things. You know, there's MUFON, there's a lot of things going on. But somehow, although you've got stuff in the UK, it wasn't kind of in a public national way. And that's where I wanted to go with it. I wanted to try and get this thing with a public face. Yeah. So when I started AMACH, it was with a view to...
And when was this?
2011,
January.
And I don't consider myself a contactee or abductee. I've had some interesting things happen, and since I started the AMACH project, oh my God, they have developed exponentially.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exponentially. Very interesting stuff, because I would consider myself really grounded and, you know, that kind of thing. So, and I'm not used to having phenomena happening, but things began developing and happening, and I'll maybe touch one or two of the more interesting ones. But I began getting... requests to talk about publicly what had gone on for people, because they wanted the world to know. Because, you know, you may have met people as well who have lost homes, families, businesses, their lives, because they've actually come forward. So I wanted to provide a support and say, I'm going to stand shoulder to shoulder with you, and I'm going to help you field any questions or whatever from my point of view.
So you're talking, this is the... extraterrestrials, beings, whatever, are talking to you and saying, you need to speak up.
Yeah, it is. So people with these anomalous experiences, and I use that word because it's very difficult still, even with all the knowledge we have coming through, the Tic Tac stuff, the Nimitz, you know, Tom DeLonge, all the rest of that, It's still hard to quantify and to qualify, and everybody wants evidence. But frankly, when you're dealing in the quantum world, magnetics and consciousness, we don't have a lot to put off physical points to or hands on. And that still is hard for us. And I understand that because I also want to see the physicality of it. But at the same time, having come from regression and working with health and wellness, I know there's a lot going on in the consciousness. And I wanted to bring some of that knowledge to, and the counselling kind of side of things, to this incredible field, which is so rich and so full of information and education for us. I think this is one of the most amazing things for humanity ever. And I think if we can just access it a bit more as human beings, as opposed to, you know, having things happen in the big media world, and by that I mean, you know, the hype of it, and just to have, you know, the Joe Public come forward. But, you know, I
think people are afraid.
They're very afraid.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I really have. My very first on the Amash Project meeting had a few very brave souls come forward. And, you know, one of them ended up in tears because he really wasn't going to speak publicly. And then he did. His name's Scott. And his interview's out there. And he just said he nearly lost his marriage. And I think that probably, I think that's gone now, I heard. But he and his sons were having these incredible experiences. And these are in England.
Yeah.
And then, you know, these people are lovely. They just are coming from heart and their honesty. And, you know, because of the ridicule and that factor, it's a traumatic event. So not only are they having trauma because we're not used to having these other events happen to us, and it is a bit scary. I will put my hand up to, I've had some events which are a bit challenging since I've started going public. So the Amash Project, what I did with that was basically interview people on camera and eventually radio as well. And everybody from experiences to scientists and researchers like Grant Cameron, and shout out to him for his fantastic work on the Stanton Friedman work. Wow, good on you, Grant. And then it's become the ET, it's been superseded as the ET newsroom now, simply because the Amash Project got lots of problems and was hacked, and the phone was sounded like it was tapped. Oh, yeah. Loads of things.
I wonder who would be doing that then.
I wonder.
So it's the ET newsroom.
The ET newsroom, yeah. And really, I've given myself permission to have a very wide remit for what I'm going to produce and what I am producing. So whilst I'm about to go back into, I'm going to start podcasting myself as well and just talking to some of the people, getting some of those stories out there, just having another avenue out there, and maybe doing a little weekly news roundup, something like that, with a name like the ET Newsroom. I really should.
Yes, I think you have to.
yeah. Only 15 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
But there's just so much to do in this field to bring it into the public domain in a wider framework. And what I mean by that is, for example, this last year, 30th of November, to be exact, we produced an album called Eclectia.
Yes.
And the criteria for being included on the album was that you had to have had some incredible experience of ET. Now, when I say incredible, I don't mean it had to be off the charts. I mean, you just had to had an experience. So, yes. But I did include...
I mean, it looks a great cover, very Sergeant Pepper, I must say.
It is very Sergeant Pepper.
It's great.
And the guy in the suit there, and I know we're on radio, but I'll just point to him. That guy there is Dan Vallely. He's a lovely Scots guy back in Glasgow now. He's not only an experiencer, but he is also a graphic designer and musician. He's on the album.
Yeah.
And he designed it, and he came up with, he's a Beatles nut. And he said, I came up with an idea, and he said, that's terrible.
So he did this, and I think that's fab.
He did that, and inside, you haven't taken the wrapper off, but inside are the two fabulous albums, which are now, at the moment, I've only got these albums, which, you know, gifting to you guys, because we haven't...
That's fabulous inside, isn't it?
It's available on download by, you know, most major online platforms, but the physical isn't available publicly yet, because we're hoping that a record label's going to come and say, what a great idea. Let's do volumes 2, 3, 4, and 5 and so on.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to listen to it. I'm definitely going to listen to it.
Yeah. But what we've done with that album as well is something completely different. So it's a world first. It's international. It's got people from the UK, US and Canada. And it also includes sound bites by the guys and girls talking a little bit about their experiences.
Oh, it does.
That's very different.
Yeah.
Not every single one, but most of them, about 90% have. And then I've interviewed people like Grant and one or two other cutting edge researchers and experiences about what's happened to them. So just very short interviews to really mix it up.
So the music on there here, because I wasn't able to download it when
it. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, but the music on here is all everybody that's experienced something.
Yeah.
And the songs are about that experience.
Not all of the songs are about that experience, but everybody. Every person has their story.
Yeah, their story.
One of the songs on there, which is one of my favourite, I mean, I love them all, but there's a real rocky song called Big White Triangle by a UK guy called Gary Williams.
Yeah.
And he had a profound sighting in Luton in 2009.
I mean,
you know, hey, Luton, you're right.
Luton, who would have thought?
But he said it totally changed his life. Now you think, well, it's only a sighting. How can that change his life? Well, it did, because he said it's real. And he said it was low enough that I could almost throw something at it and hit it.
Really?
And he saw it for ages. And just he and his pal were looking and looking. And he's described it. And he couldn't get it out of his head. And he just, you know, got the song together. And it's actually brilliant, him and his band, Justice Kane. And there's another guy called Greg Fitzgerald, he's done work with Madonna and some others kind of out there. But his song is Man of the 80s. But he's had these downloads, which is what a lot of the musicians have talked about. Like,
yes, and lots of them dream the songs. Like Keith said, he dreamt Satisfaction and woke up and wrote it down.
You know, isn't it incredible? So what is this? And it's interesting because although I'm not a musician, I have a passion for the arts. Generally, my background in training was theatre and a bit of TV and stuff and voice work. But I have an absolute passion for this stuff. And like I heard you say the other day, I'm just absolutely, I wouldn't say I was obsessed, but I'm absolutely driven, is what I'll say, by working with the subject and working with the human beings who are around and any other beings, for that matter, who are willing to come on board and in a loving, harmonious way.
Yeah, and talk about it, because it's something that's not talked about,
really. It's so exciting as well, because, you know, I've spoken to quite a few people for whom it's very traumatic and scary. And what I'm interested in is helping people get beyond that too.
Yes. I must admit, I mean, when I saw my UFO and I saw the orbs, it opened my mind. And I mean, I'd always thought we weren't alone, obviously. But when I saw a real UFO, I went, oh my God, it's like, for me, I had the proof.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting. So that's always stayed there with me. But I think it's only now that people are more open to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because I heard a little bit just coming up on the train of your interview with Robbie Williams, and I don't know whether his agent sent him on a copy, but I did send one to his agent of the Eclectia album, because I thought this would be right up his street, just to maybe get on board and come on the next album or whatever, who knows. Yeah. Anyway, but what's really interesting about that is that he's from a part of the country. Stoke-on-Trent isn't exactly near Stourbridge, it's about an hour or so away, but there's a guy who's also a professional musician. He's not on the album, but called Bill Brooks, whose name is on the book, the 44, that I wrote back in 2016, or published then. And he had quite a few experiences right round where Robert Plant lived. I mean, it is unbelievable whether Robert Plant was on site at that moment in that house. But I went on a field trip with Bill to all the major sites that he had, sightings and events that he had.
So Bill is the ex-soldier.
Yeah. He was in the army for only about 6 years. But I tell you what's really weird, right? This guy, the reason that there's 44 in the title is that he was 44 when he had what I describe as a download, and other people would recognise from the description of it as a near-death experience. In terms of, you hear that NDEs, people have this movie going on, they see and feel everything in moments as if they were actually there. That happened to Bill, though he wasn't in a near-death situation.
Oh, he wasn't.
No, he was having a drink after a gig, analysing it, having a drink, having a smoke, put the TV on the background. And then all of, and now he, at that time, he's half Welsh, half black country guy. So he actually saw Robert Plant before he became famous on Stourbridge's Town Hall singing number.
Did he?
And he, when he saw him, because Bill has kind of wavy long hair, and they met in the gents, and Robert's was longer but straighter. And he said, "How do you get your hair like that?" Bill goes, "Well, mine's natural." Anyway, but Bill had no idea about any of this until he was 44. And that night, living in Wales, he was coming over the Berwyn Mountain. And I don't know if you know anything about the Berwyn Mountain.
No,
but
I don't.
In 74, there was an alleged UFO crash there. Now, I've been over there. I've been to the site. Not of the crash. You can't actually access that very easily anymore. But
and why is that?
There's also a car park. The first time I went with Bill in 2014 to the location, because what happened as well, before we had the download, on the night back home, so he's driving back home from Port Maddock, and he loses about 26 miles worth of time. I went, oh. He said, yeah, I sort of became aware that I was suddenly driving and I was just about at home. I went, oh, right, let's do that. So we did the drive, 26 miles. It wasn't the short time he said it was. But after the download, he didn't remember this at the time. He remembers seeing a big old UFO coming over, following the contours of the land. It's not a big, big mountain, but it's an undulating landscape. And he had a big old Volvo and he could see the reflection of it as he remembered it at 44 in this download event of it on the car bonnet.
Really?
And then when he gets home, I mean, get this. I mean, this just does my head in. I've asked him many times about this. And he said, so he parked his car and he'd got a new baby. He said, the most precious things in my life were my guitar and my new baby. Went, put his guitar away under the baby's cot, put his car away, looked up at the end of his road. And I've been to this location. It's only about 50 yards from what would be the front door.
Yeah.
And there's a massive 300-foot conical-shaped object giving off electrical energy.
Yeah.
And he was an electric guy in the army, so he knows about that stuff. So he's looking at it. He says, I was only within about 10 foot of it. I said,
What, it was just hanging there in the sky?
Yes, just hanging 10 foot from him.
Gosh, 10 foot.
And I can't quite, you know, I've been to all these major sites that he's had these incredible events. And he said, I was there for about 20 minutes just looking at it.
Staring.
I said, what did you think then, Bill? Because this is a guy who, right, black is black, white's white. And, you know,
those soldier guys, yeah.
But also his mentality, he wasn't, and I'm not saying this made any difference, but he had no schooling. He came from a world which was a bit different than ours today. And although he's not, that far down the timeline, it's very, very poor, impoverished. And he had a brother who was severely disabled physically, needed a lot of care and attention. And dad worked away. So he became the kind of caregiver to his little sister who went to school. And he just became nature boy. And so he virtually never went to school. So he never had any structure to his life or any way of thinking about things except that was his own. And he was just, you know, what I can see and touch is that works for me. So it was absolutely incredible. And I said to him, well, what did you think that was then?
Yeah, so what did he think?
He thought it was a reflection, like a hologram, from some kind of circus or fair that was on about 5 miles away in Oswestry. I went, are you kidding? He went, no. And you know what? He really believes that. He honestly believes. When he instantly forgot it, went in through the front door, sat down,
really?
Got his drink. Yeah, instantly gone. These guys are so clever at mind manipulation, which is why that was the title of the Amash Project, included in the title, to reflect that, because we don't know how our minds are being managed, because they're not being managed by us, not very often anyway, in these situations. And when he sat down and was reflecting, had no remembrance at all of A, this 300-foot conical object, or the UFO coming over the Berwyn Mountains. I think that he was taken and had missing time. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
And no, I'm sure.
He kind of believes that now.
Yeah. So what changed his way of thinking?
Oh, he had a download.
Oh,
he saw
a download.
His whole life.
Oh, I see. Okay.
From 2 years old, 2 to 3 years old, he was taken as a baby,
as
a youngster, and he saw every abduction, every event.
Really?
But he said, for someone like him, and this is where the trauma comes in, for someone like him, it broke his mind.
Yeah, it's hard to accept.
He became an alcoholic for 2-3 years. He said, Jan, he said, you can't believe it. He said, what I never believed to be true was suddenly true. And there's no denying it. But yeah. Who could he tell? He was ridiculed. It was hard.
You don't know where to turn, do you? It's funny because I've spoken to a few people who it's upset their lives so much.
Oh, yeah.
Until they've opened up and
absolutely.
Found some, lots of them go to move on, actually.
Yes, yeah. Of course, yes.
Yeah.
So I spent a long time working with Bill because when he called me, I'd just done an interview with a guy who'd suffered severe brain damage in a, I can't remember which war it was. I don't know if it's Afghanistan or whatever. Sorry, I should remember. Anyway, Stuart Neal, his interview's out there. But he contacted me about a very weird, strange event that I'd had, and he said that he knew what that was. I don't believe that what he said was what happened to me, but I can talk about that in a second. Mm. But he talked about his unbelievable lifelong ET experiences, this guy. So
gosh,
as well as telling,
amazing.
He was in Special Forces. And the reason he was brain damaged was because he got too close to a mine and unfortunately, was the worse off for it. But anyway, so Bill saw that interview and thought, well, she's got her head on, she's believes this guy. And, this guy was very credible. And so Bill contacted me because he'd just had a week where he'd... I think he'd nearly died then. He'd had a week of heart attacks and several heart attacks and strokes. And he thought, I'm not going to make it. I want, I'm now ready to have somebody tell my story or be out there. And we did record him, but he was very frightened at the hands of humans, not. There was some things going on, which I won't go into. It's in the book if anybody wants to read it. Which
it's in this book?
Yeah, there's only one book and it's called 44, based on an ex-soldier's true story of lifelong encounters involving alien abduction. Anyway, so he'd had a lot of trauma, not necessarily ET orientated, but that was traumatic as well. So he became very afraid and said, look, I don't show my face. Even though he came and spoke at my conference in 2014, bless him. And so I said, well, great, we'll do interviews. So we did quite a lot of radio interviews.
Yeah.
We don't do them now because of the strokes and what have you. It's really affected his memory. And it's not that he doesn't remember. It's just that it's very slow, like a stroke, to come through. And that doesn't make for good radio.
So he survived it all then?
Well, yeah, but he... Interestingly enough, in 2014, I started the Amash Files, which was my own radio show, just internet radio show with People's Internet Radio.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, so the week after he was my guest, I had him on as my recently deceased guest because he died the week before. He went into cardiac arrest and died. He was gone. But the paramedics
brought him back.
And he's only a small guy. But he said it took three of them to hold him down because he thought they were attacking him when he came round finally. He had no frame of reference. He thought, what the hell? And
God.
Yeah, very interesting. Anyway, so he came on board. But the first week I started my show, which is about the first week of October, actually we're coming up to that anniversary. I was walking, my show was 11 till 1. And in the UK, and I went out walking my little doggy at 10, and I kind of said to the stars, whoever's listening, come on, guys, just show yourself, can't you? Bearing in mind I'm not an experiencer and all the rest of that. As I looked up on the return journey home, I saw what I thought was the Orion's belt, the three stars.
Yeah.
I went, okay, that's nice. And then as I continued looking, the one on the left went left. The one in the middle went forward, and the one on the right, and they went out of my field of vision, and the one on the right went to the right but stayed in my field of vision. I went, oh, but
there
they were like points of light. They weren't like in your face. But it was like, yeah, we know. Okay.
Well, yeah. We're here.
All right. Is that good enough? Can we deal with that? Can we leave it at that for the minute?
Yeah. That was great.
So that was... was extraordinary. That was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, lots of people say they see it at a triangle. There's lots of, the three lights like that.
Yeah.
And then they move on.
Gary Williams' song is called Big White Triangle because he said actually it looked like something from Star Wars initially until it changed its orientation and then it took on the form of a massive white triangle.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
God, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. So up close and personal. So, Anyway, so going back to how the world perceives this field, and I feel I'm on a mission to bring it into normalcy, if that's the right way to phrase it, because I think we've got a lot of learning to do from this, and we can have a lot of amazing things happen from this, as well as the technology and all the rest of that swathe of, you know, interest and information goes to. I also think that just the human story is so important, and understanding our consciousness in a different way, you know, all these layers of us is incredible. At the moment, just to throw in another interesting thing, I've got a series called The Dowsing Detectives that I'm planning for next year to start writing up and doing some...
The Dowsing Detectives.
Dowsing, as in dowsing, using like, dowsing rods, Because... in 2013, there was a documentary that Channel 4 put out. It was done in tandem with Off the Fence Productions in Bristol.
Yeah.
Turned out to be more a mockumentary than a documentary, but that's another thing.
But
I mean, you know, the thing is, I know, but we laugh, but you know what? This is what they were doing. They wanted to make the people that I'd worked with who had the courage to come forward look like absolute idiots. And they did. They did a great job. So thanks, Channel 4. So now, how about we do another one?
I don't understand why they...
and do it again.
I don't understand why they... Is that because they are afraid to accept and...
I think it's driven from something else. I think it's driven from higher stuff. Because you look at, because when I wrote the book and got that out, I contacted all the local media, and, you know, The Sun and all the rest of it, and the Express, and those papers all put out the sensationalist headline, you know, because Bill was in Germany, that was where he was first sent. And he went to a nuclear base, which was one of the first in the world back in 68. And it was shared with Area 51 personnel. And he had his first abduction, one of the major military abductions in that location.
Really?
Yeah, within the first week. So they want to sensationalise it, and okay.
They want to sensationalise it, and they...
to discredit it, because they want to
discredit it, and it makes everybody afraid to speak up.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm kind of driven, I think, because I just want to bring this much more to bear, because I think it's a lot more part of our lives. That sounds terrible English anyway, you know what I mean, than we realise, actually.
I really think so too. And I think by speaking up like you are and everybody is that I talk to, I think it's helping it become normalised. Normalised?
Yes.
Yeah.
Normalized. I mean, it is an incredibly exciting field because... You know, this subject, it's across the board of all kinds of people. So it has nothing to do with race or colour. It has nothing to do with your job.
Yeah.
It you know, some people may say maybe it's to do with genetics, and that comes into it to a degree. A blood group comes into it to a degree. And I don't know about, can't say always, but there often is. And ICAR, I think it's Butch Witowski, if I've got the right name, who does a radio show over in the States there. They did a survey of blood types, you know, from people who'd been taken.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about that, and you'll have to forgive me if I've got the exact numbers wrong, but it's something like the rhesus negative globally is about 7% of the other blood groups, you know, like I'm A positive and, you know, O positive, that's the majority. So rhesus negative, AB negative, they're very rare.
Yeah.
O negative also.
They can't understand where it comes from, can they?
Yeah, well, they say it's only about 25,000 years old. So, you know, that tells you something right there and then if that's true.
Yeah.
And clearly we're not from here, are we?
No, we're definitely not.
And on the ICAR sampling, I think they said that the rhesus negative came up to about 17% of the overall grouping. Now, if you think that the global population is only about 7 and 17 for the abducted or taken parties, that's actually a lot percentage-wise, comparably, isn't it? But you know what else is really interesting? This is, I'm just going to zip back to Bill again as a child. He had weird things happen to him from very, very young. When his brother was not mentally disabled at all, and sometimes those guys shared a room. And when he came back from the army, Bill's brother was at pains to try and get him to listen to him about the aliens. And Bill thought his his disability had reached his brain. I said, honestly, come on, how can you think that? And actually, that caused a falling out. And at the end of his life, which it was not a long life, Bill's brother... So Bill saw his brother on his deathbed, which was only 6 months before he had his download. And his brother accused him of being part of what he had experienced in his life. I don't know whether the disability came into it, whether he thought there was experimentation or something or what.
Really?
And Bill had no idea what he was talking about. Of course, 6 months later, he did. And what I was going to say was as well that from a young age, he had things happen to him. Like one of the things that happened when he was about nine, this is Bill now.
Yeah.
When Bill was about nine, he was asked to go into town to get to the shops to get some more medicaments for his brother. His mum was still a youngster at the time. So off Bill went and he was approached by a man in black. And he wasn't the archetypal man in black that you hear, but he was an American,
yeah,
hat, black coat, all the rest of it. And he started talking to him about joining a club, maybe like a youth club. Anyway, Bill must have thought this was really okay because the guy said, well, if you want to join, I better ask your parents. And so he went home with him. And his parent, because Bill was always a loner because of, you know, just the way things were, yeah, and didn't go to school, his parents thought this might be a good idea for him to go to this school, which a club, which some other kids were going to. But this, bear in mind, this is a guy who's American.
And where was Bill living at the time?
In the Black Country, in the West Midlands.
Oh, in the Black Country, yeah.
So what's, in a very poor area, so what's...
A guy in a black coat and...
An American who's clearly not from the area, not anything to do with the area, doing that. But so Bill said yes.
So what was this club?
Well, I'll just about tell you. It was actually run by the Mormons, he found out. And this, it was this order. It was called the Ancient Order of the Antediluvian Order of the Buffalo. Actually, isn't ancient Antediluvian Order. It's it was only set up in something like 1850s. I mean, it's old enough, but it isn't ancient. And the guy said to him, he was a Rosicrucian. He said, "You're a bit young for us yet. You go here and have, you know, and when you're old enough, I'll come back for you," kind of thing. And so guess what these kids did? So these kids, so I said, did you have a great time? He said, I had a great time. Learned baseball. That was really good fun. And of course, England being England, there's lots of inclement weather. So I said, well, what did you do when you couldn't go out and play? He said, oh, we did games with the mind. I said, oh, yeah, really? What sort? He said, oh, levitation, telekinesis.
Really?
Can
and
you
he
believe?
Was only a little fella.
He was nine.
So your ET newsroom is up and running now,
The website is up and running. It's been up there for a while. And really, once the Imash project was hacked, a lovely friend helped to get all the material onto the ET Newsroom site, which is, and to be honest, it needs some work. You know what? I really could do with a fairy godmother.
Anybody that has had any experiences can get in contact with you through the ET Newsroom.
Yeah, through the ET Newsroom, or if they're musicians, whatever. There's an Eclectia website as well.
Yes.
Which has a lot of information about the album and the people on it, because there are some phenomenal people on there. It's a different thing.
Yeah, it looks great.
But, you know, I'm hoping that if there's some fantastic, you know, inspired person out there, they might think that this is a great idea and let's get the other volumes done and pick this one up and let's get this out there physically.
Yes, on the album, I haven't heard it yet, but I hear it's got rock, reggae, all different.
Yeah, because the genre.
Genres.
And
music.
I was told I can't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. The genre is not in the music, it is in the person.
Yeah.
And the person is that they've all had anomalous experiences. And this is including the paranormal, including the spiritual.
Yeah.
Because look, I don't know about you, but everybody I've spoken to, everybody, and they may use different words, but it's basically has a spiritual outcome. Changed their lives, opened their minds, made them better people.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. It
does. You know, I mean, Bill, he said, you wouldn't have liked me before. I said, well, maybe I wouldn't, but, you know.
I think you realise that there's so much more to everything than
exactly.
Your own little world that you live in your little box.
Yeah.
And it just opens your mind.
Oh,
yeah.
It's huge, you know, and these, I just feel that these stories are so important. And rather than being divisive, I think they should bring us together. And why I say that is that after the documentary, you know, one of the producers said, oh, you're just going to be inundated now. Well, I wasn't inundated, but I did have Leopard Films and September Films contact me. And one was in LA and one was in New York. And basically they were offering me, you know, let's develop a show, let's do a pilot. And so I went with New York because I hadn't been to New York before.
Yeah.
Bad choice. What they did, so I was thinking, you know, one of the things I wanted to do was to have a late night chat show, like, say, on a regular TV show. Late night chat show.
Sort of all, but more about the paranormal.
Oh, no, all and, about the paranormal. Oh, had contactees and, yeah, so I'd be hosting it and then we'd have two or three abductees, contactees, maybe a researcher, talking about their
experiences.
And doing it in a very informal chat. I did it once in one of the Amash project. We were going to do something you know, went away. And so rather than waste the time, we had all the people speaking in a kind of nice sort of casual city. Anyway, so that's what I thought we would be doing in the New York thing. So I went off to New York. So this was with Leopard Films. And what they did was shocking. Absolutely shocking.
What did they do?
So here am I as the presenter, and the idea is that we're just there in a little old studio, you know, nothing fancy schmancy. And my idea is that we're going to talk and get the story out. Like, we're talking now. It's great. It's really exciting. But no, what they would do, they would call in each of the experiencers one by one, and they would get them to be contentious. Oh, yeah. So then the guy of the group would come back and say, well, I don't believe your story, and started getting really uptight and angry. And I thought, no, I don't want to be part of it.
Once again, they tried to discredit.
Oh, yes. And they made them, trying to make them look like they were mentally unwell or whatever. And it's absolutely
And
damn
how
nonsense.
Long ago was that?
That was just in 2013.
You see, I think a lot has changed in the last few
years.
I mean, it's really incredible.
It definitely has. So, so hopefully something will come around again and we can, because there is so much to be done that's commercially viable. And when I say that, I really do mean it. You know, we have commercial interest in everything. Why not in this subject?
Yeah,
you know,
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with making a living because you're bringing information and people's stories. You know, everybody gets paid for stuff. And instead of having to do some stuff which doesn't add to this field, why not do it if you're already involved? You know, I'm thinking of myself because, you know, that's what we're working towards to do with one or two people. And in the field, it's very divisive. Unfortunately, it just seems to be the nature of the beast. But it's a little bit incestuous, maybe. Not all of it, but certain parties. And there are accusations thrown in all directions about, oh, they're going to make money from their book. Well, you know, it's not how it works. Unless you're, you know, a J.K. Rowling, you don't make money
from
your
book. You don't make money in books, do you? No.
Talking about the Bill book, that was about getting this guy's story down. And I spent 4 years, you know. I was working full time. I was on the phone hours and hours and hours because he was one place, I was another, getting this down. And this is hard.
You did well, and it's a good size book to read as well.
Yeah.
So let me ask you now, where can people get your book?
They can get it on Amazon.
Buy it on Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's 44, and it's your book you've written all about Bill.
Yeah, Bill Brooks and his incredible British story. And
the album you can get downloaded.
Yeah, you can download it from Bandcamp, Spotify, Amazon, iTunes,
and
Deezer.
Elector.
No, Eclectia.
Eclectia.
Eclectia, yeah. And the nice thing is that Merrill Fankhauser is also, he headlines it for us, and he's got a show in California called Tiki Lounge with about 3 million viewers, and he's going to do an Eclectia special, hopefully before Christmas. So we're getting some little videos of the tracks together, and that's going to be on, hopefully, in the next couple of months.
Gosh,
so that's exciting.
I can see some people I recognise here. Is that
I bet you
David
can.
Bowie there?
Yeah. There is a who's who inside as well, so.
You know, Joanna, thank you so much for coming to talk to me. It's been really interesting. And I really, really can't wait to read your book.
Ah, well, you'll have to let me know how it sounds.
That's our show for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. It helps people like you find us. Today's show was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Associate producer Colette Cooper, and recorded at Hackenbacker Studios by Alex Fielding. Theme music by Mike Hansen and Jamie Allen. Special thanks to Nigel Heath and our narrator, Mike Hansen Sr. If you want to share your stories, we'd love to hear from you. Just email info@podpeopleproductions.co.uk, subject matter Alien Nation. Beam me up next time. I'm Jo Wood.
And I believe.